Parshat Noso inaugurates the first of the halachos in Chumash Bamidbar. That is to say, that as much as there has been a mitzvah in last week's parsha, the mitzvah of counting Bnei Yisrael, but that is a mitzvah that is in the category that is called mitzvah l'sha'a. It was a mitzvah for its time. There is no ongoing mitzvah to count Bnei Yisrael. Indeed, as we mentioned last week, it's something that would need to be justified each time. The first mitzvah l'doros that finds its way into the lexicon of halacha for all generations is to be found in this week's parasha, in the beginning of Perek Hay. And let us see the pasuk. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, tzav es bnei Yisrael, v'yishalchu min ha-machane, let them send away from the machane, kol tzarua, the kol zov, the kol tamei lanafesh, anyone who's a mitzora, anyone who's a zav, which is someone who's had those emissions that are mentioned in the end of Parshas Mitzora, and anyone who is tamei lanafesh, they all need to be sent away, and that remains true for all generations, that these people who are tameim, there are certain places that have a status called various machanos, that they cannot be there. This is the first halacha. It's interesting to note, there was a classic question that was raised by one of the earlier Rishonim had mentioned the halacha. Unfortunately, I don't remember the halacha itself, but he cited the source as Medrash Vayishlach. Now, later Mefarshim, who were looking to see the source of the halacha in order to, well, they looked for Medrash Vayishlach. There is no Medrash Vayishlach. Vayishlach is in Parshas Bereishis. There is no, that all we have in Parshas Bereishis is Medrash Rabbah and Yalkut Shimoni. And they looked there, they scoured the whole of Vayishlach, which is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but they didn't find the halacha that he had referred to. And no one knew what to do. Where is this elusive Medrash in Vayishlach? Until the Aderes, Rav Eliyahu David Rabinovitz Tu'umim, the father-in-law of Rav Kook Zatzal. So the Aderes explained that the reference to the Medrash in Vayishlach, it's not to a Medrash in Parshas Vayishlach. It's a Medrash, it's the Sifrei of Bamidbar. The reason why it's called Medrash Vayishlach is because the first halacha mentioned in the Medrash is V'yishalchu min ha-machane, which is this week's Parsha. And it is a custom among certain commentators to refer to every Medrash by the first quotation of that Medrash, that becomes the name of the Medrash. For example, there is a Medrash called Medrash Harninu. That's Medrash Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim Rabbah is always called Medrash Harninu because the first pasuk that is darshan in Shir HaShirim Rabbah is Harninu Goyim Amo. So it becomes Medrash Harninu. And therefore, says the Aderes, don't look in Vayishlach, look in V'yishalchu. The Sifrei Bamidbar is called Medrash Vayishlach. Now, what's interesting is these three categories of Temeim, let's have them in front of us. Sarua, right, Mitzora that we know, and the Zav, and the Tomei Lanefesh, as much as they've all been told to be sent from the Machaneh, we need to know that these three are not sent from the same Machaneh, but rather, respectively, there are three Machanos that they are sent from. And what that means is that there are three concentric Machanos that make up the way that the Mishkan is organized. In the center you have what's called Machane Shechina, which in the Midbar is the Mishkan. Around the Mishkan you have the second Machane, which is Machane Leviya. And then around the Leviim you have the greater encampment of the Jewish people, which is Machane Yisrael. So you have broadening out from Machane Shechina to Machane Leviya to Machane Yisrael. And indeed, the halacha is that each of these three is sent out, is restricted from different zones. The first one, the tsarua, is sent out from all of them. And that is why the mitzora cannot even be amongst other Yisrael. And actually, the walled cities, which also have Kedushas Machane Yisrael, that's why he's sent out of the walled cities, because that's Shiluach Machanos. The Zav can live amongst Bnei Yisrael, he just can't enter the Machane Leviya. And finally, it's a grading system, and finally we have the Tomei LaNefesh, who can be in the Machane Yisrael and in the Machane Levia, he just can't be in the Machane Shechina. And that remains the halacha today. And in fact, as we transpose these three machanos into our situation, so actually the Machane of Shechina, Levia, and Yisrael corresponds to the Makom of the Beis HaMikdash, which is the Machane Shechina, and then Harabayis around it is Machane Levia, and then the old city of Yerushalayim is Machane Yisrael. If it were a person to be a Metzora nowadays, so he would be forbidden by Din Torah to enter into the old city of Yerushalayim. Someone who's a Zav cannot go into Harabayis, and of course it's difficult to know exactly where one ends and the other begins, but that's a touchy subject anyway. And certainly the reason why no one could go into the Machane Shechina, to the Makom HaMikdash, is because everyone is basically considered Tamei Mes. And that's the halacha, the first of the halachas. It's very interesting, having seen it as halacha l'doros, to consider how the Sforno discusses everyone being sent away. For in his introduction to his Peirush on Chumash Bamidbar, he says as follows. V'siper b'sifro harevi'i, the fourth sefer, Bamidbar, ki chafetz chesed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires chesed, tiken diglehem, organized the degolim, which was last week, the four camps with the flags, ketikun merkava haniris bechazon lenevi'ev, which is exactly like the merkava, the way that the malachim surround HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the nevi'im saw. That's how the Jewish people are to surround him with these machanos. The Haisa Kavona, and the intent was Shekasher Yachanu Ken Yisou. This is the, shall we say, holiest way to encamp, like the Malachim, and it's the holiest way to travel. And why do they need the holiest way to travel? Because they're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. Likanes Ba'aretz Tekef, says the Sforno, Bilti Kli Zayin. The original plan, had the Jewish people remained on the optimum Madrega prior to the disaster of the Meraglim, would be to enter Eretz Yisrael without having to wage a military campaign, had they been on the desired Madrega. In order to be eligible for that ultimate entry, they need to prepare. So they encamp around the Mishkan, right, which is the holiest way for them to be formatted. Other things need to fall into place, and one of them is v'hivdil kol tameim mimachanehem. Everyone who's tamei needs to be sent away from the machane, because this machane is about to enter Eretz Canaan in an entirely supernatural way. There's no room for tameim here in this machane, and that's why in Parshas Noso all the tameim are sent away. So it's very interesting, because the Sforno is well aware that this is true not only for had we been able to enter Eretz Yisrael that way, it's true for all generations, that the Temeim need to be sent away from their respective machanos. So it's very interesting that the Sforno takes something which is always true and explains it within a very specific context. It was necessary to enter Eretz Yisrael in the supernatural way. But that said, let us see something very interesting. One of the most intriguing words in the Chumash is the word kol. Because whenever you see the word kol, you know it's going to mean more than what's in front of you, because otherwise it's redundant. Kol always comes to expand. Classic example from Seder night, Haggadah Shel Pesach. Leman tiskor es yom tzeischa mi'eretz Mitzrayim, kol yimei chayecha. What is kol yimei chayecha? Well, depends who you ask. But it's either the nights, or Yemos HaMashiach, but it is beyond, it is to broaden the frontiers of what is mentioned in front of you. And that is true as far as the Medrash Halacha is concerned, for every kol. Every kol is a ribui. Okay. Now, we cannot help but note that in our Pasuk, there are three kols. For it says, Kol Tzarua, Kol Zav, V'chol Tamei LaNafesh. Now, we are expectant, because we know that kol comes to expand. It sounds like more than the people mentioned explicitly are to be sent away from the machane. That's what it sounds like. And is that the case? Says the Talmud in Maseches Psochim, Daf Samach Vav, Amud Aleph. Yes, it's the case. Actually, these kols broaden the scope of the profile of those that are sent away under these designations. And therefore, for example, Kol Zav, says the Gemara, well, Azav, the halachas are complicated, but there are certain emissions that render one Azav, and there are certain others that make you not Azav, but whatever it is, says the Gemara, all of them have to leave. That's from the Kol Zav, right? Not only Azav, but anyone in that bracket. Kol Tamei Lenefesh. Now, when we see the words Tamei Lenefesh, that sounds like a person became Tamei by coming into contact with a mace, specifically. However, the halacha is that even if you became contracted Tumah through coming into contact with the sheretz or any of those other things that contract Tumah in that way, convey Tumah in that way, he also needs to be sent out. That's learned from Kol Tamei Lenefesh, also to broaden. If a person is in the Beis HaMikdash and remembers that they touched a sheretz or something like that, they need to leave post-haste. So that's Kol Zav and Kol Tamei Lenefesh. And now something very unusual is about to happen. For there's a third Kol. Kol Sarua. Now says the Gemara, what does Sarua mean? Sarua is the person who has Taras. How are you going to expand that? What will the Kol tell you? There's only one type of Taras, and if he's either got it or he doesn't, how could Kol expand? And the answer of the Gemara is astounding. The Gemara says actually the Kol, this third Kol, does not come to include anything. It does not come to expand any additional type of person. So you say to me, so why is it written? It says the Gemara, and I preface by saying this is astounding because this is the sort of thing that if you've learned Mishnayos, you can expect to see it not uncommonly in the Mishnayos, that there's a certain uniformity of expression, that have a term having been used enough times for a reason will be used for the sake of uniformity. Says the Gemara, that's exactly what the Pasuk did. Because it's going to say Kol Zav for a reason, and Kol Tomei Lenefesh for a reason, and there's three things, it would not do. It's awkward not to say Kol the first time around, Kol Tsarua, which is unbelievable. And this presumably is, as far as the Gemara is concerned, is where Chazal got the license to do this. Because very often there are words just to preserve symmetry and uniformity. And if it's good enough for the Chumash, it's good enough for us. That's how it remains. As far as I'm aware, this is the only case in the Chumash, as far as the Gemara is concerned, that the Gemara says that the Chumash wrote an extra word in order to preserve the smoothness of the Pasuk. And there it ends. Until the Netziv comes along. The Netziv in the HaMikdavar says something which is quite amazing. As we've mentioned, this halacha is always true. The halacha is that if you're Tomei to this degree, you need to leave that machaneh. It's always true. It's as true today as it was the day it was said. Correct. That's Medrash halacha. However, that doesn't take into account where it was said. Because anything which is true to Doros could just have easily and just have correctly have been said in Chumash Shemos, Vayikra, Devarim, and Bamidbar. There is no reason why it should be said in Parshas Noso if it's always true. But at the end of the day, it was said in Parshas Noso. And the Netziv is of the opinion, and this is true for many mitzvahs, that one needs to take into account not only what the Torah said, but where the Torah said it. If the Torah said it at this juncture, it seems that there is something about this halacha that is uniquely relevant to this juncture. And the question is, what would that be? That's al derech ha-pshat. Pshat will take into account the context. Halacha is extra contextual. If it's anywhere between Breishis Bara and Le'enu Kol Yisrael, you'll learn halachas from it. It doesn't make a difference where it is. But al derech ha-pshat, it makes a difference what the context is. The context is the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar. Says the Netziv, generally speaking, a person would only have to leave the Machane Yisrael if he's a Mitzora. And when we say Mitzora, we mean he's confirmed Tomei as a Mitzora. And if he's not Tomei, we wouldn't even call him a Mitzora. That's generally true. Says the Netziv, that is true in every case other than the first sending. On this occasion, every Metzorah is sent out. Even a Metzorah who, for even technical reasons, is Tahor. And there could be any number of reasons. A Kohen saw him at the wrong time, or he got Saraz before Matan Torah, which, as far as Halacha is concerned, could not contract Tumah, but it's the same condition. Now, for all future generations, he's not called a Metzorah in the Tomei sense, and he wouldn't have to leave the Machane at all. But on this first occasion, he does. And therefore, says the Netziv, Al Derech Ha context, the Kol, this first time, Kol Tsarua, comes to include even a person who's not halachically a Metzorah, but has the same condition. But that's only true this first time, and it will never be true again. So we have a most unusual situation. And that is that the Netziv has taken note of the timing of this mitzvah, Al Derech HaPshat, and explained a word through the Pshat in a way that, with a drash tool that even the Medrash Halacha didn't use. Because when the Medrash Halacha looked at this pasuk, two out of the three kols are teaching me something, but Kol Tsarua, there's nothing to teach you, says the Netziv, not Ledoros. But for this one time there is, Al Derech HaPshat, he brings in this drash on kol to include all mitzvahs. That's one for the books, without a doubt. And what's most interesting is, the Netziv doesn't explain why. Why is this first case different than all other cases? However, Rav Kuberman suggests that the reason why it's different is because of what the Sforno said. As if to say, the Sforno identified in this initial sending out more than the quote-unquote standard sending out for all generations of someone who's Tommy. There is a special agenda going on here to ready B'nai Yisrael to enter Eretz Canaan in this miraculous way. Now, it happens to be that what they're told to do will always have to happen. So it seems just fortuitous timing. But actually, through the Netziv, we understand that this extra agenda found its mark. Because on this unique occasion, they would have to send out people that Ledoros will not need to be sent out. Because there's more at stake here. They're trying to accomplish more. They're trying to enter Eretz Canaan in the optimum way. So the Sforno actually found a halachic nafkemina through the analysis of the Netziv. So this is a very interesting insight into this first halacha of Shiluach Machanos. Now I'd like to move from here to the issue of Birchas Kohanim. It's one of the mitzvahs, again, that we have Ledoros, and it's to be found in the beginning of Perek Zion. The very beginning, pardon me, the very end of Perek Vav. And that's where we have Ko Tevarachu, and Yivarechacha, and all of the psukim. It's very interesting. It's a set formula of a bracha from the Torah. It sounds like when a Kohen is duchening, he may be fulfilling two mitzvahs, Talmud Torah and Birchas Kohanim, two for the price of one. Now, the bracha that the Kohanim make prior to Birchas Kohanim, as we know, Asher Kedeshanu v'Kedushaso Shel Aaron v'Tzivanu Levarech Esamo Yisrael Be'ava, that's the bracha, and then they start. It's an unusual nusach for a bracha because it is the only time that a bracha of a mitzvah contains within it not only what the mitzvah is, but how it's to be done. Levarech Esamo Yisrael Be'ava. Now, as far as we're concerned, every mitzvah should be done be'ava. So, why is it that it found its way into the nusach of the bracha? One could say, Asher Kedushanu V'Tzoseh V'Tzivanu L'Al Tiknei Shor Shabbos be'ava. It can never hurt. Little love goes a long way. But it doesn't find its way into the text of the bracha, and not L'Aniach Tfilin be'ava, and not Al Ntilas Lulav be'ava, but it is L'Vorach Esamo Yisro be'ava. And this is a question that has engaged the attention of many Mefarshim, and there's a very interesting answer which is given by Rav Shlomo Kluger in his Sefer, his Perush on Or HaChaim, Sefer HaChaim. And he says, you know, we find something very interesting about Aaron. Aaron is remembered in history as a person who is Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. We're told to be Tamidav Shel Aaron, Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. And the Ovester of Nosson will tell us how he used to do this, resort to all manner of devices to try and promote peace amongst people. It's very nice. And the Shaila, if one may ask, is why did Aaron take it upon himself as his life's mission to bring peace and to reign in peace amongst the Bnei Yisrael? On the one hand, you don't need a reason, but it's something that Aaron seemed to have made a point of doing. Where does it fit in within his work profile to promote peace amongst the Jewish people? Says Rav Shlomo Kluger. The final Mishnah in the Shishah Siddur Mishnah tells us something interesting about brachos. Brachos cannot be contained and cannot be maintained and enjoyed if there is no shalom. Shalom is the kli machzik bracha. It is the vessel that receives a bracha. Lo motza kodesh baruch hu kli machzik bracha ela shalom. Which is true, of course. He doesn't need our backing, but as we know, a person can have everything, but if he doesn't have shalom, he doesn't have anything. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, Aaron has been charged with blessing Bnei Yisrael. Part of his job to give them a bracha is to ensure that the bracha will work. And if there is machlokus amongst the people that he's blessing, his bracha is a bracha levatala. You give people a bracha, yivarecha Hashem yishmerecha, and they can't stand next to each other, so then what happened to your bracha? So in keeping with his mitzvah, his special mitzvah to bestow bracha on Bnei Yisrael, he needs to be sure that it will stick. That it will be fulfilled and maintained. And to that, he needs to resolve machlokesim. It's part of his job as a Kohen. Very interesting approach. And says Rav Shlomo Kluger, that is the meaning of the bracha, Hashem kiddushanu b'kdushas shel Aaron, v'tzivanu levorach es am Yisrael be'ahava. Now we understood that the word be'ahava is coming to qualify the mitzvah. The mitzvah needs to be done be'ahava, says Rav Shlomo Kluger. Every mitzvah needs to be done be'ahava. What the bracha is saying is, v'tzivanu levorach es amo Yisrael be'ahava. The Bnei Yisrael need to be be'ahava. They need to be in harmony one with the other, because that's the only situation that the bracha will actually take effect. So that's a very interesting approach to the bracha of the Ahava. I think Misnagdim were bothered by it more than others, but either way, it needs to be explained. Now, there's a very interesting shaila with regards to Birchas Kohanim. There's many halachas, normally it remains within the realms of the Kohanim. But the question is, let us say that on a certain occasion, a Kohen is unable to verbalize the words of Birchas Kohanim. So why would that be? Maybe he lost his voice. Maybe if he paid an early visit to the dentist, it could be that he's unable to actually move his mouth or enunciate the words. What will we say? It's time for Birchas Kohanim. He has no choice. He can't duchen. He can't speak. Does he have an option? So here's an interesting option. Could it be that actually he may ascend to the Dukhan and raise his hands, but if there's another Kohen there, let him ask his fellow Kohen to be motzi him in Dukhanim. As if to say, you say the brachas, yivarechacha, etc., I'll listen and be motzi me in the brachas. After all, this concept of one person being motzi another is always true of things that you need to say. You need to make a bracha before you eat. You need to say kiddush. But as we know, there's a concept called shomea ka'oneh, whereby if you listen to a person who speaks, and you listen, so then you're yotzei that way. So the interesting question is, could it be that as surely as he could be motzi me in kiddush, and he can be motzi me in hamotzi, maybe he can be motzi me in Birchas Kohanim? It's a good shaila. This question is discussed by the Beis HaLevi, the first of the Brisker Soloveitchiks, in his Perush on the Chumash, in the end of Chumash Bereishis. And the Beis HaLevi raises the issue, could it be that one Kohen could be silent? He's just standing there, listening, and be yotzei through another Kohen? Says the Beis HaLevi, no, he cannot. And the reason why is as follows. Because, says Beis Halevi, what happens when someone is motzi you? It's an interesting shaila. When someone's motzi you, it's as if you're talking. Somehow, it's as if you're talking, because you need to talk, but by listening, it's like you're talking. Okay? Except, when it comes to Birchas Kohanim, it's not enough to talk. There is a specific halacha with regards to Birchas Kohanim that it has to be said b'kol ram, in a loud, projected voice. That's halacha Birchas Kohanim. Says the Beis Halevi something very interesting. Even if listening is the equivalent of speaking somehow, but it's not going to make you speaking louder than if you really were speaking silently. Because at the end of the day, you can't listen loudly. There's a concept of active listening that's very popular nowadays, but there is no concept of loud listening. Listening is always muted volume. It can be a simulation as if you're speaking, but it can never simulate a louder volume than you're actually listening. And if you're listening quietly, so it's like you're speaking quietly. And that's not enough for Birchas Kohanim, even Bidiyavid. And therefore, says the Beis Halevi, it's a nice idea, but it can't work. Now, around about the same time that the Beis Halevi is talking about this, a contemporary of his, or maybe even a little bit earlier, Rabbi Bezalel HaKohen miVilna. There were two brothers, they were Dayanim in Vilna, Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen and Rabbi Bezalel HaKohen. And he has a Sefer She'elos HaTshuvos Reishis Bikurim. And he writes of a time when he had occasion to visit the Kehillah in Trieste, which is in Italy. And he says, I came to the shul there, and I'm a Kohen, right? Rabbi Bezalel HaKohen, so they gave me Kohen. And then they were mechabed me to lead the duchening. So I said to them, what does it mean to lead the duchening? The chazan will lead the duchening. I'm just a Kohen. I'll be duchening. But they said, no. In our shul, only one of the Kohenim says the duchening. All of the other Kohenim, they're silent and they just listen. And he's motzi them. So, I wouldn't say when in Rome, but close enough. And so Rabbi Bezalel HaKohen, he duchened for them. And it was amazing. He'd never seen it before. And then, he says, and as I got down from the duchen, recovering from this most unusual experience, it occurred to me that that's the pshat in the Mishnah. Which Mishnah? Where? Well, there's a Mishnah in Megillah, in the third parak, Daf Kaf Dalet, Amud Aleph, which talks about maftir. Maftir was a relatively later institution, and in order to ensure that people would never ever take it lightly, they used to, whoever did maftir did other things also. He would serve as the chazan, which actually remains in many places in Minhag today. If you're maftir, know what you are accepting. You're accepting musaf, all things being equal. That's from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, ha-maftir panovi, the one who does the maftir, so he is the chazan, he's oblev ne'ateva, the who knows says kapov, and he's the one who duchens. That's the Mishnah. Now, the Tosos Yontov, in his classic parish on the Mishnah, says, I don't understand what the Mishnah is saying. To tell me he's the chazan, because there's only one chazan. But if you tell me he duchens, well, that depends whether he's a Kohen or not. And if he's not, it's not going to help him. And if he is, he duchen anyway. So, what does the Mishnah mean that whoever does maftir, he's the one that duchens? And the Tosus Yom Tov remains Bitzarachiyun. Says Rabbi Bezalel HaKohen, based on what I just experienced here in this shulah, you understand that actually only one of the Kohenim says the brachos. That's the kibud that they give to the one who's maftir. If he's a Kohen, he's the one who duchens. Which is amazing. I mean, that's how you visit a shul. If you have the whole Torah in front of you, so anything you see becomes put into the Torah just to see if there's any Mishnayos that now can be resolved through that way. That's old school. I once had a Talmud, actually, in the yeshiva. So he introduced himself to me. So I said, where are you from? He said, I'm from a small town in Italy called Trieste. You've probably never heard of it. I said to him, never heard of it? Rabbi Bezalel HaKohen led the duchening in your town. So I think he was a little bit taken aback. Probably that was not the standard response. So here is the Beis Halevi on the one hand, who it's quite clear to him that this shouldn't be able to work because of the issue of you may be listening, but remember, it's not audible. It's not b'kol ram. That's critical for Birchas Kohanim. And apparently the Kehillah in Trieste, which has a Masorah for this minhag, they consider it to be acceptable. So the question is, what is at the root of this question? Why would some people say yes, and why would they seem to be not bothered by this issue of kol ram? So many Mefarshim say that really what lies at the root of this question is what exactly happens when someone is motziyu. We do it the whole time, but we may not stop to think what is happening. As if to say, the Torah was mechadesh, that things that you need to say, it's enough to listen to someone. And let us hear two possible avenues of understanding how it comes to be okay. Could it be that, which is in a sense what we've said so far, that the chiddush of Shomea Ka'one is that when you hear something from someone who spoke, that hearing is enough that rebounded from the person who spoke, and it's considered as if you spoke. In other words, it's the halachic equivalent of speech. Some say that thought is the halachic equivalent of speech. Some say that writing is the halachic equivalent of speech. And could it be that the chiddush here is that listening is the halachic equivalent of speech? Maybe. And therefore, the one who's speaking to you is, to borrow a more modern term, is your server. But once you've heard from them, your hearing is halachically spun into the equivalent of speech, and that's enough. Maybe. Or could it be that something else is happening? The only person speaking is the one who's speaking. You're listening. You're not speaking. So how are you, Yotze? Because you're listening logs you into the person who's speaking, and you are Yotze through them. Your listening connects you to the one who is performing the mitzvah, and that connection allows you to be Yotze. A branch, rather loosely, of the concept of shlichus, right, that you can make a shliach to perform something for you. Here, it's more cohesive, you need to listen to him, but there is a concept that you can be Yotze through someone else. Not that you're speaking. You're Yotze through him. That would explain the difference between the Beis HaLevi and the Reishis Bikurim, as to if you don't say a thing, if you're a Kohen, and you hear a Kohen speaking loudly, or you Yotze the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, which has to be done loudly. For if we say the first approach, that Shomea Ka'oneh means you're your own person, you took his words, you've heard them, and now it's like you're saying them, so you're your own person, except you may be speaking, but no one can hear you, and that's critical for Birchas Kohanim, and that's why it wouldn't work. But if you say that the function of your hearing is not so much in order to give you the equivalent of speaking, as if you are speaking, but rather it just connects you to the one who is, once you're connected, whatever he is doing works for you. And if he is giving the bracha loudly, that works for you, and you'd fulfill the mitzvah. So it turns out that this rather abstract, conceptual question of how it works to be motzi someone could find its mark, have its ramifications, on this question of Shomea Ka'one. But it is possible that even the Beis HaLevi, who says that it wouldn't work, it's not because he considers you to be on your own and it's not good enough. It could be that even the Beis HaLevi understands that you're connected with the one who's speaking, and whatever they do works for you. But if that's true, then why is there a problem that no one can hear you? Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in the Har Tzvi explains that here the situation is different, because there are other people in the Kehillah that have to hear you. That's unique. In other words, normally when we talk about your mitzvos that you need to speak about, those are mitzvos, they're really things that you need to say. To anyone in particular? No, other than to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, within that realm, Shomea Ka'oneh, it's like you're speaking. But as soon as other people, receivers, are brought into the equation, and you need to speak to them, you can't be speaking to them if they can't hear you. That was the problem of the fact that your halachic speech is considered inaudible. It's not going to help the people that need to hear you. Shomea Ka'oneh is not going to help you here. And I would like to actually take this a little bit further. We have a concept an occasion in our parsha of smichus parshios. Rashi often, when there's two parshas that seem to be rather put together in a very pointed way, Rashi talks about it. And we have here the smichus parshios of Sota and of Nozir. And what does this tell us? So it's the well-known Rashi, it's based on the Gemara in the beginning of Nozir, actually, that whoever, if a person sees the Sota and sees what wine and all of that and overindulgence in physical pleasures can bring a person to, he'll get a shock and he should respond accordingly and become a Nozir and take time out in order to make sure he got the message right. And that's the Smichus Parshios. What's very interesting is Rav Shlomo Fischer Shlita in the Sefer Beis Yishai looks from this point to the end of the Parsha, because we've gone from Sota to Nozir, and then what? Then we have Birchas Kohanim straight after Nozir, and then you have Chanukas HaNasiim. And right, the korbanos, the inaugurating korbanos that each of the Nasiim brought. That's why Parshas Nozir, Noso, is as long as it is, because 89 psukim are a repeat 12 times of the korbanos. So where's the Smichas Parshios there? We seem to have invested between Nozir and Sota, the connection between them, but then not between Nozir and what came after it, which is Birchas Kohanim, and not what came after that, which is Chanukas HaNasiim, and they also seem to be thrown together a little bit. Interesting shaila. The Yerushalmi in Maseches Taanis, when it talks about the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, right, what we call Duchening, identifies two makoros in the Torah for Birchas Kohanim. The first is in our parsha, Kosav Varuchu, Es Bnei Yisrael, Amor Lehem, which is the end of Perek Vav. But there's another makor that the Yerushalmi identifies, and that is in Parsha Shmini, where it's on the first day of the setting up of the Mishkan, and the pasuk says, Vayered Aaron me'asos es hachatos v'sa'ola. He finished his korbanos. Vayisa es yada vayivarech es ha'am. Which is Birchas Kohanim. Aaron intuited the nusach, according to Rav Soloveitchik, intuited the nusach of Birchas Kohanim even before it was given in the Torah. Because in Parsha Shmini, we have him saying Birchas Kohanim even before the text of Birchas Kohanim was given. That's why we say Rachenu Barbrochem Shileshes Batera Ha'amura Al Mipi Aaron Uvonov Haksuvei Demesh Avdecha. But even prior to that, it was already being said by Aaron Uvonov. That's the Chiddush. Otherwise, of course, it's said by Aaron if it's written in the Torah. In any case, the question is, why do we need two makoros for Birchas Kohanim? It's one mitzvah. Why two sources? So Rav Soloveitchik has a series of shiurim that he gave on the yortzat of his father, shiurim Nazecha b'Morizal, and one of the shiurim is about Birchas Kohanim. And the beginning of the shiur, he talks about this. Why are there two sources for the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim? And the answer is, says Rav Soloveitchik, because Birchas Kohanim actually has two aspects to it. There's two elements to Birchas Kohanim. On the one hand, it is a mitzvah like all other mitzvahs. It's one of the 613, and in a sense, they're different, no more, no less. And that's really learned from our parsha, Kotuv Varuchu, as surely as there's a mitzvah of V'chalta V'savato V'rachta, under certain conditions, there's a mitzvah of Kotuv Varuchu. It's one of the Tariag mitzvahs. However, Birchas Kohanim has a second aspect to it. Not only is it a mitzvah that in principle could be performed in a vacuum or at any time, but it also takes its place as the conclusion of the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Which it does. When the Mishnayos and Maseches Tomid, when they describe how the Avodah was done, they brought the Korbanos and then the Kohanim Duchened. And there's a special quality of Birchas Kohanim that on the one hand, it's an independent mitzvah, its own mitzvah, but on the other hand, it finds its way as the sealing of the Avodah. It's the Gemar of the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. And we should know that the implications of that impact us, as we'll see in just a moment. But says Rav Soloveitchik, that's why the Yerushalmi brought a second source, the second Mokor. Because the first Mokor is Kotav Aruch Hu. When? Where? Doesn't say. The second Makor tells us when. Aaron finished the Avodah and blessed the Bnei Yisrael. That's what cements Birchas Kohanim as the Gemara of the Avodah. And the way that it affects us is, in our experience, there is no place for the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim outside of the Avodah. Even today, there is no Birchas Kohanim except for a very specific place in Tfilah. Tfilah taking the place of Avodah. And you won't find it anywhere else. Even though in principle it sounds like a mitzvah that could be fulfilled even outside of Tfilah. Just like other things that we customarily perform them during Tfilah, but they're not bound to Tfilah. The mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog. Everyone takes Lulav and Esrog in Shacharis, on Sukkot, during Halil or whatever. If for some reason you weren't able to, so you do it afterwards. You haven't forfeited the mitzvah. It's not exclusively tied to davening, but duchening is. And that's because of the second Makor, it ties it to davening. There is no context for the fulfillment of Birchas Kohanim outside of Avodah. And that is why the halacha is that the time, the critical time, where the Kohanim go up to the duchening is during the bracha of Ritzei. Because Ritzei is the bracha of Avodah. And what's interesting is, and Rav Soloveitchik takes this further in his own unique way, but actually, the bracha of Ritzei is quite similar to the bracha that comes before it, which is Shema Koleinu, because they're both really asking that the tefillah will be accepted. Shema Koleinu, hear our voice. Ritzei means that Hashem should want our tefillos. But they're two separate brachas. And the reason why is because they correspond to two different aspects of tefillah. On the one hand, tefillah is, it's a person talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is, it has its own meaning and own fulfillment. But something else happens as well. Because we say that tefillos are keneged tmidim. The tefillah corresponds to the daily korbanos. And that what that means is that there's something within a tefillah that actually has an aspect of korban about it. And that's what happens in the bracha of Ritzei. Until Shema Koleinu, they are requests. And Shema Koleinu is asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to accept our tefillah as tefillah. The bracha of Ritzei is when the tefillah turns into a korban. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu ba'amcha Yisrael u'b'tfilasam v'ashev es ha'avodah l'dvir be'secha. That this tefillah should be in place of the avodah until the avodah is put back. But that's when the tefillah becomes a korban. And that's the closest we get to the actual avodah nowadays, and that's when the kohanim go up to the duchen, because their duchening is part of the avodah. And now, we should consider a chiddush. Avodah, we would think, if we have two categories of mitzvahs, which we do, ben adam lamokom, ben adam lachaveiro, and someone would ask, avodah, the concept of avodah, which does it fit into, which category? So it squarely lands in the domain of ben adam lamokom. It is the quintessential mitzvah, ben adam lamokom. Davening, avodas hakorbonos, it's right? Reach nichovah flashem. And that's true. But at a certain point, says the Beis Yishai, avodah becomes turned outwards to the Jewish people. Because the final act of avodah is Birchas Kohanim. And Birchas Kohanim is a mitzvah ben adam lachaveiro. It's not ben adam lamokom. Benching is ben adam lamokom. Saying thank you to Hashem is ben adam lamokom. Saying may Hashem bless you is ben adam lachaveiro. Pure. And that's how the avodah finishes, which is very interesting. And in fact, this could even impact halachically, because the Vilna Gaon, in his Peirush to the Shulchan Aruch, in Zimit Kuf Kaf Ches, Zifyud Gimel, says a very surprising comment. Every mitzvah is always preceded with a bracha. Put on tefillin, make a bracha before. You take lulav, make a bracha before. Every mitzvah needs a bracha. And in fact, duchening also has a bracha before, as we said. V'tzivonu levarach es ha'moyso ba'ava. Says the Vilna Gaon. Now, you'd never guess this. But the Gaon says, the bracha before duchening, v'tzivonu levarach es amo yisrael ba'ava, is not a chovah. It is not required. It is a hidur in the mitzvah. How does he know that? Well, says the Vilna Gaon, I know it from the Shas. Because if you look in the Talmud, in Maseches Sota, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, you will see that they interviewed Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. And they asked him, Bamo herach da yomim? Which, if said in a nice way, is a complimentary thing. How do you merit such longevity, such long years? And he told them a number of things. And he was a Kohen. And one of the things he said is, V'lo nosasi es yodai b'li brocha. I never duchened without making a brocha first. Now that sounds like he went the extra mile. These sound like unusual hidurim, not the basic halacha, says the Vilna Gaon. Apparently, making a bracha before duchening isn't necessary. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua inaugurated it, and he attributed his long years to it. That's why I say it, says the Vilna Gaon, which is very interesting. Again, I would add, don't try it at home, but that obviously is meaningless for so many other reasons. But one should know that b'shor sheha inyan, the bracha is not required. But the question is, well, why ever not? Manishtana ha-mitzvah azos mikol ha-mitzvos. Every mitzvah needs a bracha, and this one, optional. Of course, minag Yisrael, Yisrael kadoshim heim, everyone makes a bracha. Says of Shlomo Fisher, very simply, the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos states that every bracha ben odom la-mokom, or the rule is that a mitzvah ben odom la-mokom requires a bracha. Says Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Kesef Mishnah, apparently the Rambam is intimating that mitzvahs ben odom la-chaveiro don't require a bracha, which happens to be true for essentially every single mitzvah ben odom la-chaveiro. There's plenty of them, we do them, but there's no bracha on them, for various reasons. But that's the categorical rule. So, says the Shlomo Fisher, if the rule is you don't make a bracha before doing a mitzvah ben odom la-chaveiro, and we have understood very clearly that the mitzvah Birchas Kohanim is a mitzvah ben Adam Nachaveiro, so in principle it should not require a bracha, which is what the Vilna Gaon said. It happens to be that there's room for a hidur, which is very nice, but it's not required. I wonder, maybe I'm not sure how to check this, but I wonder if that's why, even as a bracha, it doesn't have the straight formula of Birchas HaMitzvahs that other brachas have, because it doesn't just go into Asher Kedushanu and Tzotzav Tzivanu, but rather Asher Kedushanu v'Kedushasa Shel Aaron, which is more of a bracha of Shevach, and maybe that in a sense is part of what establishes it as something to be said before, because a straight Birchas HaMitzvah is actually unnecessary. It's Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, don't take brachas beforehand. Now, let's come back to our halachic question of Shomea Ka'one. Can one Kohen say the brachas and the other Kohen next to him listen to him and be yotzi that way? Said the Beis Halevi, no. Because people need to hear you. And they can't hear you if you're just listening. They can't hear you listening. Now, we understood that Shomea Ka'oner, whatever works for him works for you, but somehow it breaks down in Birchas Kohanim. Says the Moshe Sternbuch, in the Ma'adim Muzmanim, in Chelek Zayin, Simon Reish Lamed Beis, the reason why it doesn't work for Birchas Kohanim is because Birchas Kohanim is Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. The entire concept of Shomea Ka'one is between you need to do a mitzvah towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so he was Mechadesh that it's good enough for me if you hear it. However that works. But a mitzvah Ben Adam L'Chaveiro means part of it's a chesed that you're doing to your fellow Jews. Part of that interaction and part of what you're bestowing for them is they need to hear you say to them, Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Shomea Ka'one is not going to work for them, because in terms of your interaction and what you're looking to do for them, they need to hear you. That's why there's no Shomea Ka'one in Birchas Kohanim. And what's interesting is, this bracha, as we said, it seals the avoda. It's the end of the avoda. And in a sense, says the Shlomo Fisher, it's a closing statement about the avoda, which is interesting. In other words, because really, as we said, much of the avoda is focused reach nichoach l'Hashem, spin odom, lamokom, But at the very end, you could say the ne'ilah of the avoda, at the very end, the Kohanim turn back to Bnei Yisrael and bless them. Yivarecha Hashem Yishmerecha. And that's a statement about their entire avoda. Because really what they're saying is, we are doing the avoda in order to benefit the entire Jewish people. That's what our avoda is all about. Which gives a very interesting perspective. All of the merit of the avoda is to generate for the klal. And what's interesting is, says Rav Shlomo Fischer, that is what sets the Kohanim aside from the Nazir. Because the Nazir, in a sense, when he becomes Kadosh, and he's called Kadosh by the Torah, he's called a couple of other things also, but he's called Kadosh. And he's Kadosh in a very insular sense, because he really secedes from the Klal. He has little to do with people. He grows his hair, he insulates himself, and he becomes Parosh. He's a Nazir. The word Nazirus means to draw back. V'yinazru, Nazaru, is to draw. He draws away, in a sense, from people. Now that's a legitimate reaction to what he's seen, and he needs time out. But that is contrasted with the Kedusha of the Kohanim. Because the Kedusha of the Kohanim, who also have their own rules, but they're Kodesh in order to help them do the Avoda, and their Avoda is for the benefit of the people with whom they live. And that actually is most explicitly expressed by Birchas Kohanim, because Birchas Kohanim is the signature on their avoda. All of this avoda is to make life better for Bnei Yisrael through the proximity of the Shechina. And that's why, that's Inyan Smichas Birchas Kohanim Eitzel Nazir. It's to contrast the insulation of the Nazir with the embracing of the benefit of the Kahal by the Kohanim. And the final step leads us to the Nesiyim. The Nesiyim are all Yechidim. But what's interesting is, they all decide to bring a Korban, each one representing his own Shevet, and the Korban is identical. Now the Sifrei Zuta, which is a smaller collection of Midrashim, says that, and we know that their Korbanos were identical because we go over it the whole time. Korbano, Karas Kesef, Achaz, Shloshim, Shleim. It's Hanukkah. And the Sifrei Zuta says, because those korbanos were brought in 12 consecutive days, including Shabbos. They started on Sunday, and day 7 was Shabbos. And the korban was Docha Shabbos, which is unusual for a korban yochid. Says the Sifrei Zuta, had they not brought an identical korban to each other, then whoever went on Shabbos would not have been able to go. What's one thing got to do with the other? So the Mefarshim explain, because it was bringing a korban that was identical to each other that actually gave all of their korbanos the status of a korban sibur. Because each one represented his Shevet, but he was ensured to have a uniformity with the rest of the Tzibur, and they simulated the effect of a Korban Tzibur, and a Korban Tzibur is Docha Shabbos, which is amazing, actually, because really what that tells us is that any individual can actually make himself a representative of the Tzibur. That's why it ends up with the Chanukas and the Siyim, because they took their cue from Birchas Kohanim, who take their Kedusha and turn it for the Tzibur, and each Nasi also made sure to stay together with the Tzibur and represent his Shevet in the same way that all of the other Shvatim represented, which became Korbanos for all of Klal Yisrael. The Achdus of the Jewish people is a very beloved thing. And that may well be why the Torah goes over the uniformity and conformity and the identity of every single korban again and again, 12 times. We get the picture after the first two or three times. A lot of psukim could have been saved. But anything which is chaviv to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, like the Mishkan, the Medrash says, the Mishkan is chaviv, say it again. What do you see by the Jewish people? Every Nasi brings the same. You could have easily understood each one wants to make his mark, how his Shevet is different, etc. But each one takes all of the uniqueness of his Shevet and puts it into the same external presentation of Korbanos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what a wonderful thing that is. It's 89 psukim, and they're all worth it. To conclude with a very interesting story on this inyan, I'm reminded of the Rosh Hashiva of Mir, Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Finkel, Zatzal. So there was a time when money was tight, things haven't changed, and the Avreichim of the Kollel came to the Rosh Hashiva and they demanded a raise. It's not enough money. So Rav Finkel said, listen, there is more money, but I need it for the yeshiva. So I'm sorry, but I can't give you anything more. Now, only Litvaks could do what's about to happen. And they said, actually, no, the Rosh Hashiva has to give us more money because we're the Rabbim, right? There's a lot of us. There's only one of the Rosh Hashiva. And in any dispute, one always follows the Rabbim and not the Yochid. That takes some saying. Rav Finkel's response was, that is not true. There's many of you and there's only one of me, but you are not the Rabbim and I am not the Yochid. You are all Yechidim and I am the Rabbim. And the reason why is because each of you wants a raise for themselves. So there's a lot of you, but you're all Yechidim. I'm only one person, but I'm keeping this money for the benefit of the entire yeshiva, and that makes me the Rabbim, and the halacha is like me. And it's a tremendous limud, because really the difference between Rabbim and Yochid is not always a question of numbers involved, but whose interest you have at heart. And that's really the amazing message that we see from the end of Noso. It goes from Nazir to Kohanim to the Nisim, that any Yochid can attain the status of a Rabbim if he has the interest of the Rabbim at heart. We'll leave it over there for this evening.